Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities, all you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy
way. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight, to continue with our Clocktober month, brother Jay and I are going to talk about the 1979 movie Time After Time, directed by Nicholas Meyer. Now, do you remember what else Nicholas Meyer directed?
No.
He's the director of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and the Day After TV movie.
You know, it started real strong, Wrath of Khan. I mean, that's that's awesome. But, Star Trek...
Well, Star Trek VI wasn't the best.
It wasn't terrible.
The Day After, though, that's an iconic piece of...
Suppose. It's quite a bit of scare propaganda. I mean, it's still pretty scary.
I was going to say, it resonated with you as a child for sure.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and as we have discussed previously, Dr. Wenders and I actually watched it within the last 10 years, and it's still a little bit creepy.
Hmm. Well, Nicholas Meyer also wrote a very popular novel called The 7% Solution. It's the most popular Sherlock Holmes story not written by Conan Doyle.
Wow. I've never even heard of it.
And he's written a couple other pastiches of Sherlock Holmes. So this movie actually fits right in. Now, this is on your list, right?
Yes. Okay. I'm so sorry.
Are you?
Oh.
So how do you remember this movie? And then we'll talk about how you experienced it just recently.
I remember it being a much better movie than it was. Granted, I probably haven't seen this since I was, I'm guessing, a teenager at best. But
maybe closer to like the 80s, the early 80s, when it was on like Visions or
right.
Version of cable.
Yeah, it would have been on TV. There's no way we saw it in the theater. It's just not going to happen. It was definitely, I watched it on TV. I remember it was more scary to me because of the violence in it. From that aspect, the murder part of this movie was scary to me as a child. On rewatch, it was pretty tame, almost comedic in parts.
Well, did you, I sent you a text message that on the IMDb page for this movie, there's actually an embedded video of episode 8, season 2 of Sneak Previews with Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert back when they were youngsters. And they reviewed this and also a Charles Bronson movie they hated and also The Life of Brian. But they referred to this as a comedy.
Did they?
Yeah, this was like a romantic comedy almost.
Wow, with murder.
Yeah, although it's kind of... I mean, there's no graphic violence. Obviously, it's 1979, so it's not... Wouldn't be super graphic anyway.
Like, cut off her hand.
Well... It
sprayed blood everywhere.
Yeah, there's blood being sprayed around, but it's not... I mean, it's... It's got some tone where, and we'll get into it, about how the antagonist, David Warner, is really, he has a lot of gravitas. He's very menacing.
He's imposing.
Yes. And the idea was that he would be very charming so that it would explain kind of how women were drawn to him. And in contrast, H.G. Wells was sort of mousy and wore glasses and that kind of thing. Not nearly as ladies' man.
He wasn't as suave.
No, definitely not. So, let's see. Before we get into it, I want to read a quote from Nicholas Meyer.
So, let me ask you before we get that far. What did Siskel and Ebert think of this movie?
Oh, they loved it.
Seriously?
They thought it was charming.
Oh boy. Okay.
And I kind of agree with them. Even before I saw their review of it, I didn't think of this as a comedy necessarily. But I thought it was charming in the same way, because to me, this movie felt like those like Dean Jones like live action Disney movies from the 70s.
A little bit. I can see that.
Kind of. It's because of the twinkly, like chitty chitty bang bang level of special effects.
The prismatic colored effects.
Yeah. Which, you know, they worked pretty well. I mean,
for 1979.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's better than I could have done in 1979.
Sure.
I think the biggest problem I had with this is it was built up bigger in my head because I remember it quite differently. And I suspect that I'm mixing this movie with the movie of H.G. Wells and the Time Machine somewhat.
Yeah.
So this movie is not served well by that. Also, I couldn't tell if Mary Steenburgen is really just a horrible actress or if she is acting that bad on purpose. If that's like a choice. But good God, she was just, I don't know, God awful.
Well, we're going to talk about that.
I was kind of hoping she got murdered. So
that's funny.
In my memory, she did get murdered in the movie, but we'll get there.
Okay. So, just as a preview, you didn't particularly enjoy this experience.
I wouldn't say I didn't enjoy it. It was fine. I mean, I've watched it, and I sat through it, and I didn't fall asleep. So, those are all positive aspects. I know they don't sound like glowing endorsements of a movie, but it kept my attention, and I hadn't seen it in some time, so I didn't quite know what was going to happen next. Which is good. I was able to suspend my disbelief, but I got tripped up on some of the bad acting. It really was hard, kind of. So I did not enjoy my experience rewatching it. It just wasn't as big as I remember. It didn't have as big an impact as I remember. But again, also, I'm viewing it some 40 years later, perhaps.
Well, so I watched this movie about a month ago. And then I rewatched it last night. I've kind of put it off in my week. Normally I'll watch movies for the podcast that we record on Thursdays. And so I usually watch them on like Sunday or Monday night, maybe. But this is the case. I've had a kind of a long week. So I watched it last night thinking I would just kind of maybe skim through it a little bit. Because I remember the fine details and I remembered a lot of what I took as notes. But I found myself still kind of captivated. I think on the outside, I might have thought this was even if seeing it a month ago, I was thinking, oh, maybe this is going to be too slow that I want to skip through the slow parts. But it kind of moves along. It's got a lot of cute, quirky things, which is, again, why it was considered a comedy.
There was a lot of interesting acting that had to be done because of the time shift in period. So there was a lot of that man out of time discovering his reality.
Yeah, fish out of water.
And that was sort of thing. It was cute. It was cute-ish, but also a little tedious.
Let me read a quote from Nicholas Meyer before we dive into the plot. And this is just something I thought was not necessarily apropos of this movie, but it's something we've kind of talked about. It's on the difference between an actor and a movie star. He said, an actor is someone who pretends to be somebody else. A movie star is somebody who pretends that somebody else is them. Actors will change their face and change their hair, change their voice. They'll disappear into a role. A movie star doesn't disappear. Now, for my editorializing, I think this, what he's talking to is like the difference between a Daniel Day-Lewis and a Tom Cruise.
I would agree with that. I think that's an apt assessment.
Yeah. Okay, so let's dive into this movie, though, Time After Time. I recommend people watch it. I mean, again, this is jumping out of our normal order here. Even though I'm going to give it away, this movie is all about the experience because you can kind of figure where it's going. Is there a thing?
My fucking neighbors. That's what the thing is.
Are they arguing or are they...
They have like a shitty band in their driveway that's playing. It's like some shitty pothead grass band.
Great. And on a Thursday
night? Can you hear?
I can't. What is their... what's the genre of music?
It's like hillbilly bluegrass pothead music.
Oh, that's so funny.
It's like the worst local 4-H kind of convention, small town, Hickville, state fair reject band.
You can almost hear the scratch of the chicken in the bread pan picking out dough.
Something like that.
We were talking about a restaurant, local restaurant called the Gumbo House. And, you know, so my wife's from Alabama, so she's used to that kind of food and likes that sort of stuff. But we don't really go out as much because our child is not a very adventurous eater. So anyway, and I'm not a big like jambalaya fan or whatever, since I kind of have to avoid seafood as much as possible. But they apparently this restaurant has a band on like Saturday or Friday nights or whatever. And immediately I thought, you know, the sad thing is, and we used to go to a restaurant called Little New Orleans that had like the same like Zydeco CD on like loop whenever we'd go there. So we hear the same sort of six songs over and over again. And to me, every Zydeco song sounds like the chicken dance.
Yeah, pretty much.
So.
I mean, it's culturally insensitive, but I think not having an ear for it, there's only so much fucking accordion I can handle.
Maybe you could buy a CD from them.
The Neighbors?
Yeah.
No. No. I wouldn't piss in their mouths if their teeth were on fire. So.
Jeez. It's a little strangely specific.
And yet very illustrative.
Oh, yeah. So it's the tip of the hat.
Mental picture.
So, this movie starts out with a very bombastic, like, opening score.
It's almost, when I was watching this movie open, I thought, oh dear, am I watching the right movie? It took me a little bit.
There's a lot of these movies in this time period. Like, I got this confused, I think, partly with that Christopher Reeve, Jane Seymour movie that is on Mackinac Island. I forget what that's called.
I don't know that I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, it's more like a romance where he goes back in time. And they filmed it on Mackinac Island because they don't allow cars there. So it was easier.
They don't allow cars. Is that still true that they don't allow cars on Mackinac Island?
It is still true. Yes. You take the ferry there, you can rent a bicycle or take a horse.
Oh. Ooh, that sounds rough.
Yeah, it's Upper Peninsula, you know, of Michigan. It's great. I think it's Christopher Reeve. I know it's Christopher Reeve. I think it's Jane Seymour.
Somewhere in Time. Jane Seymour, Christopher Reeve, Christopher Plummer.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I remember it being a, you know, a popular movie of the time.
Yeah. It.
Maybe for next Clocktober.
Hey, it was budgeted at $4 million and it made $9.7 million.
Oh, you can still buy yourself a copy in every available format if you visit Mackinac Island. Spelled Mackinac, by the way.
Well, that's because the Upper Peninsula craziness, right?
I mean, maybe it's the Native Americans. First Peoples.
So, Time After Time, by the way, there is no known budget, but it made $13 million in the box office. So, it made more than Somewhere in Time. Of course, it was also 4 years later.
A little piece of trivia, even before you dive into the plot itself, is Nicholas Meyer wrote a scene, where H.G. Wells is on the bus next to a punk guy with a bad attitude and a loud radio. And they decided to cut it out of this movie, so he used it in Star Trek IV.
McDowell was attracted to the role and material because he's looking for something different than the sex and violence of Caligula, yes, in which he played the title character.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that this is Malcolm McDowell right off of Caligula. And not far from A Clockwork Orange.
Wow. According to David Warner, the studio wanted Mick Jagger in the role of John Leslie Stevenson.
Yes.
Wow. That would have been a wildly different movie.
Yes, exactly. Well, and actually here, while we're talking about these two actors, to me, Malcolm McDowell and David Warner, first of all, they've been in a lot of stuff either together or in the same series, not together, but at the same time. Like, they both appear as voices in video games. They both appear in, as voices in animated movies. And they do a ton of genre movies, like horror movies. Like, McDowell has 261 credits, and Warner has 223 credits in IMDb.
McDowell was also in a Star Trek movie.
Oh, yeah. No, they were, weren't they in the same Star Trek movie? No, McDowell was in Generations.
Right.
And Warner was in Star Trek VI.
Six.
And right. Five. And he was in Planet of the Apes 2001. So. Yeah. And this is a movie that basically only has three actors. It's got Mary Steenburgen, and it's got Malcolm McDowell and David Warner, mm-hmm. which is fine. I mean, I kind of like the sort of
sparse cast.
Yeah, because it just kind of moves, and you're just following Malcolm McDowell around. So I love the bombastic score to start off with. And we go to 1893 London, England. So we meet Herbert George, H.G. Wells, Malcolm McDowell, having a little dinner, like party or salon or whatever they called it. And he's about to show off his time machine, but he's waiting for his special guest or his favorite person.
Hey, but you skipped the opening murder.
Well, okay, yes. We see Jack the Ripper kill a prostitute.
Yeah.
In a way that is so, I mean, it's funny because it's 1979 had, like, there's a lot of sex talk in this movie. We're going to get to Mary Steenburgen later. But, like, the sex is maybe more.
It's alluded to, but it's never displayed.
I don't know. I think the prostitute in the beginning is doing some moaning and groaning.
Yeah, but it's all inferred. It's very Hitchcockian.
It is, yes, absolutely. Yep.
It's very sleight of hand.
We're going to talk about Hitchcock later, too. Actually, we're going to talk about Mel Brooks later. So.
What?
Oh, okay. No, we'll get there. Okay, so anyway. So here's the whole thing. The whole premise of the story is that H.G. Wells, the writer, is actually built a time machine. And one
he's actually an inventor, tinkerer, publisher of articles.
Yes. And he actually funded his scientific experiments by writing articles on things like free love. But beyond that, his friend, one of his, not mentor necessarily, but he certainly takes the beta role to the alpha, Dr. John Leslie Stevenson, played by David Warner, who is smart, better at chess, knows the way H.G. Wells thinks, so can outfox him. And also, by the way, is Jack the Ripper.
Incidentally.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he has just killed a woman, and which is why he is late to the party. And the police show up, and after they discuss the time machine, and then the police show up, he disappears. And we find out that he disappears because he took the time machine. Now, I'm not going to quibble too much about the fact that there's that key, and then there's that other thing, and there's a bunch of flashy lights, because that's not really the point. But the idea is he goes off to 1979, and so H.G. Wells has to follow him to 1979. And we have the, you know, H.G. Wells going into the future, which is our present at the time, now our past. He shows up in San Francisco through some reasons we're not going to even talk about scientifically. But who do we see? Who's our first person we see in 1979? Corey Feldman.
A very, very young Corey Feldman.
His first role.
A jarringly young Corey Feldman.
Yes. And this movie takes place in 1979 San Francisco. So it's fun. It's got, you know, it's really well shot. It's beautiful. Also, because the way that H.G. Wells is going to find the person that he's now vowed to take back to justice, to return to the past. The way he finds him is when he goes to change his money for modern money, he realizes that, oh, he must have done this too, his friend. So instead of, I mean, the way he finds him, detective work, is he goes to every bank, it seems, in downtown San Francisco, of which there are many that don't exist today. To me, that was like a sort of a nostalgia thing. I mean, maybe in San Francisco, you can still go to the Bank of Iran. But
maybe
not. But eventually he ends up going to the, what is it, the Bank of London or the some sort of Bank of London.
Right.
Where he, some sort of British bank, where he meets the foreign currency manager, who happens to be Mary Steenburgen, who, by the way, one of the things that H.G. Wells has said, there's another part of the story, is when they're in their normal time, the 1890s, talking about the future, because he wants to go to the future, H.G. Wells assumes that the future will be a utopia, that they'll have figured out how to get rid of all this violence, and through socialism, they will live in a utopian community. And Dr. Stevenson, Jack the Ripper, Dr. Stevenson, says, nah, people are people. It hasn't changed in 2,000 years. Why would it change?
It's some social commentary.
Yes, he says it'll be the same charnel house. Now, of course, H.G. Wells doesn't realize how bad a guy his friend is. So,
yeah, there's some not so thinly veiled social commentary on guns and violence.
Oh, there's lots of social commentary. This is kind of a heavy movie. Not a heavy movie. It's a light movie. It's a heavy-handed movie in some of the things they talk about. And the H.G. Wells character really has to, believe that violence is not the answer.
I would say that heavy is a referential callback to Back to the Future.
By the way, Malcolm McDowell plays a good fish out of water, I thought. This is, again, a very young, skinny Malcolm McDowell, and he's sort of dressed down. And David Warner is kind of, he's much more fashionable and suave, especially in his 70s gear. Because he takes to that disco outfits just fine.
Yeah. Those glasses.
It's funny.
Both of their glasses are ridiculous.
The whole period is hilarious to me, and yet kind of nostalgic. Because I was way too young in that time to feel like that was my time. I mean, my time was the early to mid-90s, or 80s, rather. But I remember the 70s. I remember this 1979 in San Francisco, actually. But I never went to those cool parties. Yeah. Anyway, so
I don't ever remember driving down the street seeing women in cages on the corner dancing.
Well, Mom and Dad didn't take us to those places.
Well, that's probably thankful.
When they left us with that babysitter, that's where they went. The one with the VW bug.
Oh, I remember, who couldn't get her pill bottles open, so had us open her pill bottles from the back seat.
Well, of course. So anyway.
It's a different time.
Yeah. But we bonded over our mutual like of the band Kiss, which is maybe...
I would say we, meaning you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't like them, and Drew wasn't even old enough to understand where he was, let alone what was going on.
Anyway, turns out Mary Steenburgen had met our villain before, because he went and exchanged sovereigns.
Yes.
This will be the second movie talking about gold sovereigns. By the way, Herbert had brought with him some jewelry and like 15 pounds or something of money, but also jewelry. But because he doesn't have any ID or anything, even the pawnbrokers or jewelry people of the time, the concentration camp survivor, which of course H.G. Wells doesn't know anything about World War One or Two or any Vietnam or anything that has happened since 1893. So we see all these really stark references that he doesn't understand and are never explained to him necessarily. But he finds out that Mary Steenburgen has guided Jack the Ripper to the Hyatt Regency Hotel. And that's where it brings up High Anxiety, because those are the elevators that we see in High Anxiety.
I see. I got the reference now. Yeah. You're right. It is the same hotel. Yep.
And so we have this little cat and mouse where H.G. shows up at the hotel room of the good doctor, the bad doctor. And the bad doctor turns on the television and shows H.G. Wells that, oh yeah, by the way, you're wrong. See? Like back 90 years ago, I was a freak, but now I'm an amateur. These people know how to kill each other on a scale he has not even imagined, but is digging.
Yeah, I'm not out of time. This is my time.
Exactly. So, of course, H.G. Wells wants to bring him back to justice because he's a
murderous monster.
Well, but H.G. Wells is also kind of a something of an idealistic fuss budget, And of course, David Warner's having nothing, none of that. So there's a little struggle, and then a strange chase scene where at one point they actually are on different overpasses, like half a block away or something.
Yeah.
Playing like an imaginary game of Pong almost, trying to figure out which way they're going to run. But anyway, so blah, blah, blah. Jack the Ripper is killing women in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And now, of course, there's the MacGuffin, because the one thing that that the time machine had is that if you didn't have this key that's been in H.G. Wells's pocket, the time machine returned back to the original time. It was like the machine itself would go back, which is how H.G. Wells followed Jack the Ripper back, you know, back to the future. But if Jack the Ripper gets the key, then he can strand H.G. Wells, and that way he can't be chased, and he can just do his thing. Dr. Stevenson wants the key, and Malcolm McDowell wants Dr. Stevenson to go back. In the meantime, H.G. Wells has met Mary Steenburgen, who is a liberated woman. Also, though, she's a woman with certain sexual needs.
Yeah, she's kind of skanky.
No, not as skanky as some of her friends.
True.
She's just more, she's more matter of fact. In fact, when he kind of impresses her, or tries to impress her by saying he wrote about subjects such as free love, she laughs at him and says, oh, she hasn't heard the phrase free love since she was in eighth grade. Which
amateur.
Kind of, yes, exactly. Which kind
of, but so the problem I have with this movie as an adult is the most obvious solution to the problem.
Which is?
At the point, the beginning of the movie, when Herbert's machine returned to him, why wouldn't he have just gone backwards in time to before?
You're right. Oh, yeah. He could have solved half of the problems of this movie if he just visited the time machine more.
Yeah. He just could have gone backwards. Backwards like a week.
Well, we have to yada yada all that.
Well, yeah, but
He could have actually gone, because, you know, I didn't realize this, although I've been on the Jack the Ripper tour. I've listened to the Ripper podcast. You know, Jack the Ripper didn't actually, his killing spree wasn't very long. It was just a couple months, I think. So, yeah, he could have come back just a couple months and avoided, solved the Jack the Ripper murders, too.
Yeah, especially because he knew who it was.
He could have actually gone forward and killed Hitler as a baby.
That too.
It's a whole different conversation about whether you'd be able to actually kill a baby. Killing Hitler as a baby means you have to kill a baby, which is kind of anyway.
Well, I think the I can't believe we're having this discussion.
But it's a discussion worth having. I don't think I could kill a baby.
No. Oh, I wouldn't kill a baby though. I would organize it so that I somehow made it so that the parent wasn't able to reproduce.
Ah, I see.
So, I mean, that way you're not, I mean, maybe you're harming somebody materially, but you're not killing them and depriving them of life. Although you're depriving their, you know, they're from a progeny, but it was Hitler. So come on.
That's the thing. Well, and of course, this is why Hitler is a good example, like a nice shorthand for what you would do in time travel, because there would be so many unintended consequences of changing just that little piece of history.
Would have a huge ripple.
Yeah, but you don't know if, like, ultimately, like, this is again a question about predestination. But
you don't know what would have happened with the Cold War and missile technology.
You don't even know what would happen after World War I.
Nope.
So yeah,
no.
Who knows?
Yeah, it is an interesting premise.
A thought experiment, if you will.
It is. And no, I don't think I could kill a baby, as much as I don't like them. But
good. I think I'm gonna consider that a good answer to that.
I don't think I could kill a baby.
I'm pretty sure I could. I mean, accidentally.
Oops.
I mean, yeah. Hopefully, God forbid, we're just having fun with words here, people. No actual babies were harmed in this conversation.
Well, that took a dark turn.
Yes.
Oh,
and besides, the baby, the fake baby, the non-existent baby I accidentally killed was still Hitler. So if it makes you feel better. I remember I was telling somebody at work years ago something about, you know, if I was going to be begging for money on the street, what the first thing I'd want to do is go get like a three-legged dog, you know, maybe a blind three-legged dog or something. And people are like, oh, I'm like, don't, oh, it's an imaginary dog. The dog doesn't exist. By the way, we're having this discussion at work also.
Wow, we are off the rails with 34 minutes.
I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Did you see the article about the kids who baked their grandparents' ashes in some sugar cookies and fed them to their fellow high school students?
No.
Well, people were, of course, appalled. But my first reaction is,
wouldn't that be gritty?
Well, first of all, I don't condone this behavior. Okay, I'm just going to tell you this right now, just before I even, again, I don't condone killing babies, and I don't condone eating like cremains or human remains. However, in high school, I would have eaten a cannibal cookie. Fucking A, absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Would have absolutely, without a doubt.
Thank you for that admission. Yeah. Is this some insight into your personality and psyche?
Perhaps your
scholastic pursuits?
Well, yeah, into my prior, into my young, impulsive personality.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't think I could. No, I'm pretty sure I couldn't.
As a man of circumference, the fact that it's a cookie makes it easier.
I see.
You know, it just depends on how much you dwelled on the fact that it was whatever.
I don't like raisins. I don't think I could eat an old person in a cookie. It's not happening.
It's just a bit, and you know, I'm not even necessarily convinced. Here, this is another thing, conspiracy theory that I adopt. I'm not even convinced that you're really getting much human remains necessarily. How would you even know? Because they're not giving you the artificial hip. You're not going to find a tooth. They're just giving you a scoop of whatever comes out of the thing, which could be coming out of anybody's whatever, right? I mean,
it could be out of the parents' wood stove for all we know.
Exactly. There's no way of knowing. In fact, you know, that's why you have mortuaries who, you know, get behind a little bit. Maybe they're trying to cut corners, and that's where you find they have 300 bodies like stacked up like cordwood, and they've been just giving people like scoops of whatever. Because an entire human body, I mean, I don't want to go into the whole Mary Roach thing, but an entire human body, if it's not a Hitler baby, there's a lot of material left. So if you're getting a, you know, Aunt Riva in her little urn is not, she's a little thing, but still not very much of Aunt Riva.
Is she still in an urn somewhere?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're not going to take her out of the urn.
They're going to put her in
the columbarium, but I think she's actually maybe in closet.
Oh, dear.
Don't know.
We apparently have a tradition of that in our family of people sitting around in urns for a while.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I mean, we never know. What are we going to... I don't know.
Oh, burn my ass and get rid of me. I don't know. Just be done with it.
Well, remember, I had a plastic bag that had people dust in it in my trunk for a while because I don't want to give any names away, but there were some ashes that were spread, but the bag itself, the person didn't feel comfortable just throwing it in a trash can. But that person also left it with me to dispose of because they knew I didn't have such qualms. Because I don't have those kind of reservations.
Sentimentality.
Well, yeah, I don't subscribe to a lot of afterlife beliefs, let's say. So I wasn't ooked out by that. Yeah. Anyway.
You hear it now.
Yes, I do hear it now. It's awesome.
It's as bad as you think it is.
Well, what you need to do is you need to get a mason jar full of moonshine and go out there and hang out and meet your neighbors.
I was actually thinking of a way I could rig a speaker pointed outside my window away from my house towards them. And I'm just thinking of some terrible either German death metal techno music or perhaps some Perry Como. Maybe. I'm trying to find an extreme. Maybe some Engelbert Humperdinck, Barry Manilow.
I'm not sure
where to go with it. Or some Korean girl band metal.
You're seeing this as an act of aggression. I'm thinking this is an invitation. You should go, because, you know, your neighbors, they're making music. They're probably having fun. Your neighbor probably, he brushed his tooth, so he looks the best. And he's out there playing his, fiddle, perhaps. Perhaps a banjo. Maybe a washboard. I don't know what kind of band it is, really. You said it was a country grungy band, or...
I don't even know.
Or you said bluegrass.
I suspect there's a kazoo and a banjo, but I really just... I just wish they would all fall into a wood chipper.
But maybe also a mandolin. Under the right circumstances, a mandolin can give me the tinglies.
Well, you're welcome to go next door and hang out with them. I would rather set them on fire.
Okay. But... Well, I'm just saying maybe a change of attitude. Just look at it from a slightly different perspective. You know, I've had this training now called, What If It Were Your Family? That leads me to tell you, look on the bright side.
I'd like to view it from a different experience where that experience was them not living anywhere near me. That's what I would like to experience.
Yeah, well.
That's what I visualize often.
I'm just thinking, you go out, you're sufficiently bearded to blend right in, okay? You go out, you hold up your mason jar, and you just yell, Freebird!
If I had a mason jar of something flammable, I would toss it with a lighter and a rag.
You know what? I'm going to side with H.G. Wells on this one and say, you know, violence is the resort of people who have run out of ideas.
He bought a gun. Well, he caved. He cracked under the pressure, man.
Well, no, he had to save a damsel. A damsel that was so scared, she was very unexpressive. Or a bad actress. one of the two. I thought she was playing pretty well being scared.
Okay, but here is one of the plot points that really... One of the plot points that really got me. Okay, so I'm terrified of dying because I found out we're skipping all over the place.
Yes.
We're in no linear fashion.
Well, okay, here, let's skip this. So basically, it's a cat and mouse game. Who's going to get who? H.G. Wells, he falls in love with Mary Steenburgen. So Jack the Ripper has to kidnap her and blah, blah, blah. He ends up getting sent off to the ether. And H.G. Wells and Mary Steenburgen go back to the 1890s where they live together. The end.
With that fucking throwaway line at the end.
About Susan B. Anthony?
Yes.
Yeah, well.
It's just ridiculous. But, okay.
Okay, sorry. Back to the things that irritate you.
So, earlier in the movie, she sees the newspaper days after because H.G. Wells, Herbert, shows her, look, we're going to move forward a week, and then there's a picture of her in the paper, and she's been murdered. So, she's freaking out, like, ah, damsel in distress. I'm so forlorn and beside myself, so I'm worried that this killer is going to come and get me. I'm so distressed that the killer's going to come and get me. I'm going to go home and take a sedative.
Well, you know.
So I can be unconscious when the killer comes to get me. Groggy, off my game, wobbly.
Remember, she hasn't seen this movie. She's still recovering from the fact that they actually had a time machine. Because she actually referred to his story as the biggest pile of shit she had ever heard. Just pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
They were judicious with their language because this was not a time, I think, in movies where you heard a lot of foul language of this kind of movie. What was this movie rated? It's probably a PG movie, right?
That's a good question. I will endeavor to research
it. There's no visible violence, really. Some blood. That's it. It's got to be a PG movie. They didn't have...
There's only implied sexual activity.
Exactly, yeah. There's only implied violence.
PG.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So
it has a 7.2 rating on IMDb.
I think it's because it's charming. Now, okay, let's talk about Mary Steenburgen, who I really like. I've liked her back when I saw her in...
What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Well, but even... Yes, absolutely. But even before that in... or maybe after that? I can't remember. No, it was before that. In Fairytale Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And she actually won an Academy Award for... was it Melvin and Howard or something? A comedy that we should probably watch, but have never seen. Hadn't even heard of, really.
No, I've never even heard of it, so I got nothing.
By the way, Mary Steenburgen also in Elf.
She was in the TV series Wilfred. She was on 30 Rock.
Oh, she's been in everything. She's great.
Yeah, no, she's got a ton.
She was the mom in Joan of Arcadia, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's great.
I believe.
Yeah. What's not to like about Mary Steenburgen? Although, it's funny, I don't remember her having such a thick New York accent as she had in this movie. I think that's her real voice, too. That's her real accent.
Cross Creek. I vaguely remember Cross Creek. I think that was one of those home movies that we had backup copies of.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yep.
She was in the Back to the Future TV series. I wasn't even aware there was a
Future 3.
Yes. But there's a Back to the Future TV series.
I assume she's been in all the TV series. Because she's got a lot of credits, too, although not quite as many. I don't think she does as many voice acting work as they do. Although, I think probably some. Now, did Malcolm McDowell and Mary Steenburgen actually get married?
In reality?
In real life.
Oh, I have no idea.
Let's find that out. Is there a way to... Do we have a machine? I could be completely wrong, by the way. I will admit that ahead of time.
Spouses. No, you were right. Malcolm McDowell, 1980
through
to 1990.
That's a good run.
And then she is current in 95. She married Ted Danson, who she's apparently still married to.
Yeah. So, yeah, what's not to like about Mary Steenburgen? Gosh darn it.
And Ted Danson looks more and more like Ed Begley Jr. every day.
I've heard the show The Good Place is really good. I haven't seen it.
But if it's, is it TV or streaming series?
I want to say it's TV, but I don't know for sure, to be honest. It's probably Amazon or Hulu or something. Again, this movie hit a lot of nostalgia buttons for me. The Mickey Mouse phone was pretty great.
What about the clear phone?
Yeah, absolutely. The microwave was pretty funny. Her little Honda Civic. Was that what it was? It a Civic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a Civic.
That was pretty fun. I mean, all the cars of the time are, you know, just pretty great. Maybe I'm in an old car frame of mind since I saw our Father Anderson's car being sent off to the restoration lot. Yeah, I thought there's, you know, and like all the fun disco outfits and stuff. I thought the music they did, even though they didn't pick any like popular songs. I thought the music actually sounded true to the time.
It did. Boyfriend Jesse actually was, he said, wow, the 70s were awful, weren't they? And I said, pretty much. And he then made the comment that the disco music in the club sounded a lot like Daft Punk.
Yeah. I think he misspoke. I think he mispronounced the word awesome.
He was not a fan of this movie.
Really?
Yeah. Was no, he fell asleep.
Yeah,
he was bored.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, here's the other thing. I think it's a 1950s movie, The Time Machine. Yeah, that movie will put you to sleep. Let me tell you, this is a much more fun movie. That's why it's just Siskel and Ebert liked it because it was fun. They, you know, the sci-fi element of it. I mean, that's not really nothing to write home about, nothing revolutionary, especially since Nicholas Meyer is no Steven Spielberg, no George Lucas. You know, he's not making Close Encounters. He's not making E.T. He's not making even the Star Trek movies at this point. He's just making a fun tale that includes Jack the Ripper and a sassy fish out of water meets a sassy city girl.
And she sure lived a pretty lavish life, by the way, because she had a garage.
Well, she lived in downtown, right? And although, you know, it's funny. At that time, I think San Francisco was not as expensive. It was certainly not as expensive as now. Now you can't live in San Francisco.
Right.
No, yeah, she had a garage and she was doing fine. Lived by herself. Had an ex-husband? Oh, it's in real life. H.G. Wells, that's actually his wife's name, was the same name as the character, Anne.
I think that was probably on purpose.
Yeah, she died, like, he didn't die until the 1940s. She died, like, in the early
1900s. 27, I believe.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And he was something of a bastard. Like he believed that men should have as many partners as they want.
Free love, man.
Yeah, but women need to be chaste, if only for appearances. So, yeah.
He was partly progressive.
Yeah, well, again. Yeah.
Chauvinistically progressive.
Sure. And he wasn't killing prostitutes, allegedly. So, you know, that's... Or we can assume that. Sorry.
Or maybe he was going back in time and erasing the evidence.
Well, that's the thing. Okay, there is no... They don't deal with any of the time paradoxes in this movie. This is not a serious movie in that respect at all. Again, it's less of a sci-fi movie than it is a cute romance.
Also, Herbert isn't really upset that he's killing prostitutes as much as he makes the surface judgment, you know, it's bad to be killing them. But he doesn't really get into gear until Amy gets threatened.
Oh, of course.
Then it's imperative.
That's when you buy a gun.
Up to that point, you're just kind of like, we got to find him. You can cook me dinner and we'll hump it out.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the liberal, rigid gun control person who, by the way, also buys a gun so that in case their home gets burglarized.
Right. I do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah, feet of clay, that kind of thing. So, but again, this is not a movie about that either. Although, yeah, that is actually, you know, that they do kind of highlight that in the end, there's a certain amount of violence that he's willing to do to defend his love. I don't know. I just thought, so to sum it up, if you were to give it a grade or to give your judgment.
I would grade this probably a B minus.
I think that's fair. I liked it, but I liked it as a B minus. I don't think it's not a C movie. I think it's better than that.
I think so, too. If nothing else, the fact that David Warner and Malcolm McDowell, Mary Steenburgen notwithstanding, because really not impressed by her presence in this movie. But otherwise, you know, it was definitely well acted. Malcolm McDowell did a good job being out of time. So some of the time it wasn't, but there were moments of nuance, if you will.
Yeah, Mary Steenburgen did a fine job. Meh. But I mean, there are other actresses definitely that could have just lightened up that role. I mean. Well, I guess you don't want to take away from the two main characters as much because
could have been Angela Lansbury.
I was thinking like a Goldie Hawn type or
Goldie Hawn Nancy would have been Allen too sticky.
Well, that's the thing. You don't want to overshadow with a big personality. Like you can do a Madeleine Kahn.
Oh, no, 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 no. Yeah, you're right there. But who else would have been a good mid-range like Farrah Fawcett?
No, I think you need someone more, a little more down to earth.
Less damsel-y.
You need a nice, like, Sidney Williams, Joyce DeWitt type.
Oh,
yeah. Because remember, she can't be super glamorous.
Like Linda Evans, maybe?
Maybe. An Erin Gray, for instance.
Oh, Erin Gray, that's a nice pull right there, yeah. I can see that. Yeah.
So I would think that, I found it worth it. I don't know if Brother Drew would think it was worth it. I don't even know. He's on vacation right now. So I'm unsure whether he's going to, watch this movie at any point.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of fun.
I'm right on the fence there. You know, again, I'm comparing it probably unfairly to my past recollection, which is probably not the fairest of comparisons, but you know.
Well, in the last couple of weeks, I've watched Hold the Dark and The Girl on the Train. The Girl on the Train, by the way, is really good. I think I liked it a lot. Emily Blunt. And then we're at a Blunt Fest.
Careful. You get tested for that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Oh, Canada. Yeah, no, Emily Blunt is great in the... I recommend The Girl on the Train. We should actually maybe even talk about The Girl on the Train.
Okay.
Because it's worth seeing. Oh, I also saw the movie Unsane, which I think we should watch too at some point.
Yeah. Kind of fun. What's that about?
It's about a woman who is... She believes she's being stalked. And her stalker is showing up all over the place. And she goes for counseling and gets actually involuntarily committed to a mental hospital. And then she starts seeing her stalker there. And so it's unclear whether or not she is delusional or this is really sinister. And I won't give away any part of the ending. But yeah, it's worth seeing. It's interesting.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so, okay. Time after time. I liked it better than you, I think I can fairly say. But, yeah, I think it's perfectly acceptable.
Well, I'm glad, because I was more worried that you were going to hate it.
Oh, no.
And because I don't know that I'm giving it a ringing endorsement. But if you haven't seen it, I think it's probably a perfectly fine movie to watch once and put away. I don't know that there's going to be a lot of rewatching this. There's not a lot of value to a rewatch, unless you go maybe 30 years. Then it might be worth
it. Every 30 years we'll revisit. So.
Yeah. In another 30 years, they probably will have a time machine.
Yeah, there we go. We can go watch this in the theater. So, maybe not.
In San Francisco in 1979.
In 1979, yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah.
So, any housekeeping?
I did love the mental health music
from
last week. So
thank you.
I assume that one will be making an entrance every now and again. You are not alone. I am here with you. We're all a little gray, not in a creepy way. You are not alone. Yes. So now I have the compulsion to make mental illness. So.
Well, partly I was, you know, I wanted to frame the little segment because it could have easily, because we all talked about something, you know, kind of led from one thing to another. But by the time we got to Drew's story, I was pretty harsh, I think, or judgmental. Or I was just taking a lot more humor out of it than maybe he intended. I didn't want him to feel picked on. And I think actually telling these stories actually might help other people. I mean, to the extent that we have listeners, the listeners will see themselves in some of the silly things we do.
I mean, I hope that people realize we weren't picking on him. I wasn't. I don't want to speak for you, a sock puppet. I would say that I identify and commiserate and have empathy because I think that you know, we all engage, enjoy, and or suffer our own differences in our own mental issues. So
it's all the spectrum, right? So,
of course, yeah. We won't talk about how I eat M&Ms. So,
exactly. Well, can you give me 2 minutes? I'll take a quick break, and I'll come back, and I'll tell you my car story.
Yeah, I'll just listen to hillbilly music,
and we're back. So. Hey, actually, this dovetails here a little bit. One thing, like, I consider myself kind of an optimistic person, except when it comes to things like, oh, I don't know, home repairs or car repairs. And then I am pretty fatalistic. I mean, I think I get that a little bit from our father, where it's like, oh, geez.
Is it fatalistic or realistic?
Oh, it's pretty fatalistic. I mean, I just assume, to the extent that I believe in voodoo, you know, I just spent my my permanent fund dividend on a computer, basically, and my daughter's birthday present. So, you know.
So your car is going to die.
So my car is going to cost at least as much as that money would have been. So that's what I was expecting. I was expecting it to be thousands of dollars because the symptoms of my 2002 Ford Escape were that when I turned the wheel at any point, even when stopped, or when I went over a bump, even if I was going straight, it would make a squeaking noise. So that could be all sorts of stuff. It could be power steering stuff. It could be like rack and or pinion. It could be, you know, axles like Dr. Wonders had a problem with. Although I wasn't having any like squirrely steering issues.
Well, the Dr. Wonders wasn't either.
Yeah. Well, until he did.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So, but squeaking is bad. And after a certain amount of turning up the radio, I figured, I've got to actually do something about this, right? So, because I thought it was going to be fairly extensive, or at least a couple days worth, we decided, fuck it, we'll just rent a car. Right. So, I looked online, and I got what I thought was a decent deal from Alamo. You know, not the most prestigious place, but it was fine. and I rented an intermediate SUV, a Hyundai Tucson, as it turns out, which is a car I've been considering, you know, it's like in the running for eventually buying someday because it's about the right size, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
And it was $160 for a week. Yeah, a week should do it.
That's pretty affordable.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah. So we picked it up on Saturday, and I'm going to turn it in Friday. Tomorrow is Friday. And I thought, oh, that's great. You know, no problem. So I picked up the car. It was great. The mechanic shop thing is only a couple blocks from my house, so I literally just drive it over there and walk back home. And but it was like Sunday evening, like about 6:30 or something when I dropped it over there. I was just drive it there and go to the back of the shop and take, you know, those envelopes that you write your thing on, drop your key and throw it in the key drop.
Sure.
But the back door, one of the bays, the back door was open because there were evidently still people working there, even though they're not open on Sundays. What had happened was the guy was out test driving a car he had fixed, so he was going to pull it back in there. And I was like halfway done filling out the little form when he came back and he says, hey, you drop it off? Like, yeah. So, well, here, why don't you give me that and I'll just pull it in the bay and that way you won't have to worry about it overnight, you know, getting broken into or something.
And you hope he's actually an employee and not robbing the business.
Well, yeah, that way it would have been pretty astounding if he had, not surprising for Anchorage because we haven't had any stolen car bonanza lately. But yeah, so, but what, basically I wrote like squeaking when turning or something is all I wrote down because I was felt kind of rushed. Right. So I gave it to him and I had told him when I made the appointment, cause I had to make an appointment a week in advance cause they were pretty booked, that it was squeaking and the person said brakes. I'm like, okay, maybe, but maybe not. I don't think so. I had my brakes tested relatively recently, I thought. So the next day, it was Monday, so it's a normal thing. So I went out and took the Hyundai out to the parents' house, and Mom and I went and picked up all the girls and crammed them in the back of the Hyundai, which is not quite as roomy as the Escape, I don't think. the 2002 Escape, which is much more boxy. But there were some creature comforts I really like. I like Apple Play Radio, where you can just plug in your phone, and it actually like has all of the like, will play your podcast, even on a non-Apple app. It's great.
Yeah, CarPlay. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I should just get a stereo that has CarPlay on it. That would maybe let me enjoy my car for the next several years. So anyway, so the next morning, like I dropped it off like the night before. So even before I took Journey to school, I get a call from the shop saying, hey, basically you need rotors and brake pads in the front. No. You need a brake job. Like $330. Yeah. I'm like, sold.
No,
and can
not
you throw
bad.
An oil change on that? Great. Perfect, you know, under $400, life is good. I'm thinking, okay, now I just take the rental car back, right? No problem. And then I started looking online, thinking, well, maybe I'll get some money back. Here's a trick that because I didn't try to do this, I don't know to what extent they would do this to me. But if you take a rental car back early, turns out they will charge you like a change rate if you're not like a Super Plus member of National Emerald Club or whatever. They will charge you like $15 to change your contract. And then if you're getting a weekly rate and you turn it back early, they could technically charge you the daily rate for the days that you had it.
Which is going to be more.
Which would be, the daily rate that I could see was $130 a day. So I'm like, well, for $160, I'm fucking driving this car for the rest of the week.
Yeah.
Now, I've since seen online where people are like, just go ask them. They're probably what they'll do is they'll use those parts of your contract not to give you any money back. But they're right. Not. They want the car back early, right?
Yeah, they can give it. They can rent it to somebody else.
Yeah. So they said the chances of you actually getting a bill, being charged more are pretty low. But yeah, don't.
You ain't going to get charged less, though.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is fair enough. You know, whatever. So I've been driving around again. It's the more I drive it, the more comfortable I am in it, and the more I'm used to now the creature comforts. So it'll be, you know, it'll suck to go back to the old car a little bit. Not too bad. Anyway, so they call me and say like at 10:30, 11 in the morning and say, hey, car's done. So I said, oh, cool. So Mom and I are out shopping. So we go and race over there, and she's going to drive the rental car the block and a half back to my house, and I'm going to drive my car back to the house. So I pay them their $370 or whatever it cost me for the brake job and oil change. And I didn't even turn the car on. I just sit in the car and I turned the steering wheel. And it was like squeak, squeak, squeak. So I go back in there. I said, "Hey, come with me." Like, so he sits down in the car. The guy who checked me out turned the wheel. He's like, "Oh, that's not good." I'm like, "Yeah, that's why I brought it here." He's like, "Ooh, I'm so sorry." So this worked to my advantage. So they pulled it back in the bay, and I had Mom pick me up again. And so we drove off, and I'm like, "Well, I'm glad we didn't take the rental car back." So they called me a little bit later in the day and said, "Okay, so it turns out the guy who did the brake job and did the he just went out. I guess he drove it before he did the brake job. He could feel the brakes doing their thing or whatever, and a little squeaking and a little bit of shaking, I guess, when he braked. Yeah. So he didn't really pay attention to the squeaking of the steering wheel. Like, oh, that's embarrassing. So the guy's like, "Oh yeah, there's a ball joint that needs to be replaced."
Oh,
I'm like, "Well, how much is it going to be?" And he's like, "You know, I haven't even worked it up yet, but it's not going to be very much. Don't worry about it. We'll get you on the road." I'm like, okay. So Journey and I have to go and pick up groceries, and then we race over there before it closes so I can pay for it and whatever, so I can get the car back to the house at least. And anyway, so it turns out, feeling pretty lucky, even though it ended up costing me like another $125.
Yeah.
But what they did was they had to replace a tie rod and the ball joint. But he didn't charge me for any of that. He basically just charged me for the alignment that they have to do when they screw with the steering.
Well, that's probably fair.
Yeah, so now I got a brake job and an alignment and no squeakiness, and I'm feeling like $1 million.
So your steering's probably never been better.
Exactly, yeah. And I was looking at I know a tiny bit about the car thing, so I was looking to see if like my tires had really funky wear or something on them that would indicate all sorts of different problems. The tires are fine, so whatever it was going on hadn't been going on for all that long, I don't think.
That's good.
Yeah, so I get to, so it cost me, $600 when it all comes out, which is still a lot of money if I would have known about that a week ago. But it was about a third as much as I thought I was going to pay if they had
to. Well, and if that's all the money you have to put into it comprehensively for the next couple of years, that's a pretty good return on your investment.
It's less than 2 months of a brand new car payment,
right?
So yeah, yep. So I was feeling pretty lucky, so we'll see. And if I can figure a way to get a stereo with CarPlay in there, my 17-year-old car can last a couple more years maybe.
Yeah, CarPlay's pretty sweet. When I had to take my Explorer in to get it repaired after the thieves destroyed the interior, the rental car, my agent was nice enough to arrange my rental because we have rental coverage. When she called Enterprise Rental to get me a car, she made sure that they gave me the same model vehicle that I have.
Oh, perfect.
Of course, it wasn't the level of my vehicle, but it was the same model. So, but it had a newer stereo. It was a year newer model. So the stereo was better. And the navigation was better. And I was like, bastards. And I can upgrade the computer and brain and navigation system in my vehicle. Would you like to guess how much it would cost?
Oh, like $1,000.
Oh, it's more than that. It's $4,000.
Oh, then that's not worth it. Sorry.
No, I'll use what I have. Yeah, they can eat me. So, yeah. So I'll be fine. That's crazy.
Well, that was the one thing I noticed when I got into the because, unlike like when we went to San Diego and we rented from Dollar, we actually got to pick from a long row of cars whatever we wanted was in that row, This was not the same. This was, again, Anchorage, and
you got what they got.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, they gave me a Hyundai Tucson. I was like, yeah, that sounds great. Although I had the moment of, first of all, the little fobs on the Hyundai. Are like, they feel like as big as hand grenades.
Yes.
And there was no like key thing that I could see. So I get into the car expecting to see a push button, and nope, there's a key slot. And I'm looking at these two gigantic fobs thinking, I'm going to have to go back in front of my daughter and ask them how to start the car. And then I saw this like shiny like knob button thing, and I pushed it, and it was like a switchblade.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's sort of silly, but kind of fun. I guess it would be better on your pockets, I guess, if you throw your keys in your pocket.
Some of the fobs are like that.
And, if it was my car, I wouldn't be carrying around two fobs on a piece of cable I can't cut.
Well, but yeah, they do that because they don't want... Yeah,
that's fine. Like I said, it's not a big deal. But I noticed that unlike... Because Kelly has a 17 Escape, mm-hmm. and this is an 18 Tucson, and we almost actually got a 17 Tucson, but when she went in, she told them, we want the one with the bells and whistles. So the one we test drove, and then the Escape we actually bought, she's got the leather seat, she's got the premium sound package, she's got all of the creature comforts. This is not that. This is like a...
entry-level rental.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But again, it's fine, I mean, I don't know if I'd want to, although after driving it for a week, I could see buying this car if it was the right price. Very car I'm driving. Oh, you know what I don't use? A backup camera. I had been plotting to put a backup camera in my 2002 Escape because it seems like it's fairly easy to do and it might be helpful in certain circumstances. In this car, I'm just finding it kind of distracting.
Well, it's a good tool to have just because it gives you sometimes some extra angles, some extra access when you need to look around corners and things when you're backing out.
Yeah, so, well, and it, but I can see that there's not a child behind my car.
Kind of, if they're taller than the bumper.
Well, I suppose you're right.
So, because I have backup, I have a backup camera. I also have a front camera so that I can see, and it'll fisheye angle. So I've got two modes. So at the front of the car, as I'm pulling out, I can hit the button again and it expands the view. So it actually sees the front of the car out. So I can see around corners. So if there's a car parked in front of my house, as I'm pulling out of the drive, I can see around that car, which is nice. Same thing with the backup camera, but the backup camera is a little harder to use because it's in reverse. And of course, then you're like going left, going wax on, wax off, and they hit the house and all that business. It is kind of useful for aligning myself in the driveway because it'll put lines, put a grid up.
Yep, I like
so that. That's helpful.
Yeah.
But as far as using it solely to back up with, I still turn my head. Yeah, there's no way. Also, because there's just enough lag in it that I don't trust that it's close, but it's not as fast as my eyeballs.
Do you have the proximity warning too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because this doesn't have that. Kelly's does. Kelly's will beep at you anytime you're close to
it. Yeah, but the problem is with that is it goes off so much that you just start ignoring it. Well, like it always goes off. So it's hard to know, it has different intensities and different tones. So it lets you know when you're getting close to being more stupid. Sometimes that's the different. And sometimes
You'd be surprised. Even somebody who has never had it in their own car, how I was kind of waiting for it to happen as I was backing up. Cause I'm, used to seeing Kelly's rearview camera and then it leaves different levels of beeping. So at least it tells you that, that it's doing something. But this car, there's none of that, although it does turn down your radio. It mutes your radio while you're going in reverse, which is kind of hilarious.
The thing that my car does with the perimeter detection system, sometimes it will randomly go off, which will scare the fuck out of you. Like when you're sitting at a stoplight by yourself at 3 a.m, or I guess more like 5 a.m is when I go to work. But like 5 or 6 a.m, I'm sitting at a stoplight and like suddenly the right side goes off, but there's nothing there.
Ghosts.
Either that or I'm asleep and somebody's hit me and I don't realize it. Those all these things that go through my head. Or in the summertime, sometimes I think bugs flying into it would set it off because all of a sudden I just have something like, what the hell? Like just only one little part of the car went off. I don't know. So I don't know how that technology works, but I also don't understand how it knows where the lanes are to tell me to get back into the lane and will steer me back into the lane.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Oh wait,
A little creepy. Yeah. It works, but it's a little creepy how it knows.
Let me tell you, this has a Tesla 3 that drives him around.
Yeah, I don't know.
But scary. I don't know.
I'm not there yet.
I can't imagine him driving without his hands on the wheel, though.
Yeah. My car actually yells at you if you don't have your hands on the wheel.
Yeah.
It will tell you, put your hands on the wheel. So it's smart enough to know better.
Yeah, I can't imagine, like, eating soup.
I have yet to... I tried to use... So it will park itself, supposedly. And I used it... I have attempted to use the auto park feature once. And I was pretty convinced it was going to...
Exactly.
Back us into another vehicle. I'm like, fuck this. I am never using this again, ever. It scared the crap out of me so bad.
That's so funny.
So I'm like, nope, you know what? I learned how to parallel park going to driving school. Thank you, Harry Busilli. I'm good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no. So.
Yeah, you got to use this knowledge too. I mean, you got to use it or you lose it. So I like having those kind of skills.
Yeah, I'm fine. I can parallel park like a son of a bitch. So I'm going to keep that skill sharp. So.
Yeah. But I mean, I like the idea though, that I guess what is it, a Mercedes or something that actually have the car will back out for you if like somebody blocks you in.
Oh, that's just nice.
Remote back it out of a parking spot.
Yeah, that's pretty pleasant.
Which is great. Yeah. Again, as a matter of circumference, that's a handy thing to have because my days of crawling in through the hatchback are probably over.
Yeah, that wouldn't be too much fun. No. Crawling in through the sunroof or something.
Yeah, it's not going to happen, sadly.
I can't even fathom that. Yeah. So the vehicle, Dad's Starliner is to the shop.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I saw it on the flatbed, so that's good. I'm really thrilled for him.
Oh, me too.
I'm sure not as thrilled as he is, but
I think he's pretty psyched.
Yeah, well, good. I hope so. It's pretty awesome.
Yep. So, I think it's going to be great. When it's all over, it'll be so much fun.
Has he christened it with a name yet?
Wouldn't it have already had a name?
Well, I don't know. It's got a new heart, so I don't know.
Oh, there you go. Maybe we could get him some sort of born again certificate, a rebirthing.
Oh dear.
But they're gonna document, and he's gonna go visit it. I'm like, yeah, you need to take pictures and stuff because
this
would be a fantastic document to have.
Oh yeah, I mean it'll be a testament.
Yeah. So we'll see how long it's gonna take him though. Next summer probably.
Plus, it will document to the insurance company how much money he's actually spent and how much it's going to need to be insured for.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's going to have to be insured for more than its resale value. How about that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
But, oh, yeah. This will be fun. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in